Welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network. Hello, I'm Tucky.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And hello, I'm Lewis.
That was very musical and melodic.
Hello. Kind of went into dramatic, into a musical.
Yes. It's the way to greet people. Start off with a yang.
And the Oscar for Best Musical goes to...
Lewis!
Oh, right, okay, so... Interesting day so far today.
It has been.
Yes. Oh. Someone's been having fun with a pop-up book. Someone's just almost sliced his fingers off with a knife.
It's fine.
Don't ask me what's going on.
The Geek Show podcast is recorded live in a kitchen.
Yes. Lots of blending going on here.
It helps calm me down and suppress my killing intent.
Is that because of the anime you've been watching that you're featuring today?
No, it's because the people I hang out with.
Blunt.
Right, okay, let's
not
get
like
into
this knife if you don't shut up.
That's not a knife. This is a knife.
That's a spoon.
I see you've played knife and spoon before, mate.
Yes. Oh, played for a got.
References.
Right, okay. Let's get into the news. First up, then, is the trailer for Sausage Party.
Woo!
Now, we all watched the trailer for the new... Was it Seth Green?
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen vehicle called Sausage Party, a CG animated movie, and... What do you guys think?
Fight. Well, and then stuff happened.
Yeah,
it's not so much food fight and then stuff happened. It's just kind of, I think it's trying to be horror, but it's not.
Is it?
Yeah, it's trying to be horror, clearly, but it's just not.
It looks like a stoner's dream.
Yeah.
I don't know. I more got the impression it was inadvertently slightly scary.
It
wasn't trying to be scary. Oh. It's more supposed to be, like, funny in a dark way.
Nah, you tell Seth's just got high, he sat there, and, what if, dudes, what if food was people?
He got too stoned while cooking one day.
And
just
from
like,
that,
he's just cutting into a carrot, and he's just like, I got an idea.
No, he used the wrong herbs. This tastes a bit like sage.
Didn't tell you, he's just written down something on a napkin, went in the studio, went, look, just budget me this.
Yeah. Well, at least he's not like, was it Zack Snyder and Sucker Punch, where he had the idea when he was 13, and it shows.
That explains so much. I mean, like, you know, it wasn't the best movie, and, you know, it had some cool stuff, but yeah, it shows.
It shows that.
Because I don't want to just
it's
entirely
a crumble
over it.
Yes. At least it's not as that as
be
bad
like
as that,
Ruby do it well.
I'm not disputing that at all. But yeah, Sausage Party, and aside from the and this is going to sound really really odd, but the buns really are creepy.
Yeah, they have sideways lips, if you know what I'm saying.
Giggity.
Yeah. And the bun and the sausage belong together, apparently.
The thing is, the buns are wearing lipstick as well.
Yeah, I know.
I know that joke.
The potatoes are Irish.
Yeah, the potatoes are Irish.
These stereotypes are, yeah. It's just, nah.
And lots and lots and lots of swearing.
I think if they're going to do stereotypes, what they need to do is they need to get those potatoes, cut them up, make them into chips, have the woman cook them up, serve them to his son upstairs playing video games while he's eating them. He's like, hey, man, what if food was, like, sentient, man? And, like, when you eat them, like, they have feelings, too, and they feel the pain of being cooked. Like, that'll make a good movie.
Right, see, my main problem with this is, you know, Peter, who are they try and prevent cruelty to animals.
And Pokemon.
Yeah. And you got the vegans and the vegetarians, and they don't eat meat or anything like that. How is this going to hit them if you've got vegetables that are sentient?
Oh, don't give them ideas.
Don't eat
God.
Anything, ever. Just
I live on sunlight
feelings.
And fresh air.
Oh, no, the tumblers are already full of weirdos. We've got to say,
I'm
it's going to be a
post. Because
post.
I could see someone doing this someday. It's how like every they? Exaggeration that someone makes as a joke, like, oh, I heard Donald Trump will be president one day. That's how ridiculous America is. Every joke like that seems to happen these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have someone who's going to be like, plants have feelings too.
I know there are already people out there, but movies like this will give them the excuse to talk.
But Seth Rogen did it in his movie Sausage Party, and vegetables clearly have feelings.
I don't know what to tell you, man.
Well, I have a solution to that. Let me replace your brain with this turnip.
Look at the casts like the same. Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, James Franco.
Yeah.
All of his smoking buddies.
Yes, it is. And you look at James Franco and you just think, yes, we know, James, we know you're happy for a reason. Anyway.
I'll take the kids to that one then.
No,
you don't want to scar them for life.
I think that one's going to be a 16 or an 18 at least.
Yeah, most likely.
Given the level of language in there already, it's 16 or 18, I reckon.
I like how they did the whole, like, we're not going to use any bad language. We're going to make this like a really bad kids view. And then as soon as things got dark, all the swearing happened.
Yep.
All the swearing. All the F-bombs and A-bombs and B-bombs and all kinds of letter bombs.
And all of a sudden days. You're on a list.
Right, okay, so leaving that to one side, we also got the first promo for Haven't You Heard I'm Sakamoto?
No, I haven't. Have you changed your name recently?
Yes. I will. Now,
deed poll.
When we were watching this, you mentioned the perfect actor to play the role of Sakamoto.
It's got to be J. Michael.
No, not Vic Mignogna. It's got to be J. Michael Tatum.
J. Michael all over this.
It is. The character is J. Michael Tatum all over. It's Tatum through and through.
I don't know.
Tatum is as fabulous as Sakamoto.
Fabulous.
If not more so, but...
Would you describe Sakamoto as fabulous?
Oh, God, oh, yes. Yeah.
I'd say he's more cool and smooth than fabulous.
I don't mean fabulous in that way. I mean fabulous as in just, you know, he's amazing. He's fantastic. He's, you know, cool and smooth and just, you know, he's better than everybody else and knows it and isn't afraid to be flamboyant with it.
Okay.
Geordie would look at him and go, he's all right, isn't he?
Yeah. Basically. I mean, I'm okay or anything, but, you know.
I mean, any character who can fence with a wasp using a compass. And that is an actual thing from the manga, and it looks like they've included it in the anime, given the promo has a shot of it. That is just somebody who's way, way, way over the top, like, you know, more human than human, I should say.
Yeah.
And we're still not sure if he's an alien or not.
They've not, yeah.
But he is a bit too perfect. There's no way he could be real, isn't there?
Nah, we'll find out, though. We'll watch on. We'll see. We'll see what he gets up to.
But, yeah. And they've got the cast as well. They've got the newly announced cast. And Hikaru Midorikawa is going to be playing the role of Sakamoto. But they've got Tomokazu Sugita, who also plays Gintoki, playing the role of Achan. And they've got quite a good cast, actually, when you look at it. Yui
Which
Horie,
one was Achan, again?
Achan, I think, is the one who becomes, like, his best friend.
Oh, okay.
And they've got Yui Horie in this, playing Aina Kurunuma, Mai Nakahara, Ikari Tomura, Kana Ueda. They've got loads of really good voice actors and actresses in this. And I really am looking forward to it.
It looks really funny.
Yeah, I should be interested to see how it is animated. One thing, it wasn't quite as over-the-top as I was expecting in the trailer, but it looks like it will be quite good.
Yeah, I think they're trying to tone down that bit of it and keep it more kind of grounded a little bit so that the comedy can really work better, because the comedy in this really works only if it's grounded, because it's taking it outside the norm.
Yeah, yeah. If they sort of like Nichijou'd it up, it would.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be quite the same.
Exactly. I mean, the whole thing with the wasp in the classroom, it's something that everyone's kind of, oh no, there's a wasp in the classroom. Oh no, it's going to sting us. Everybody run. But nobody expects one of the students to get a compass out and start fencing with it.
Yes. It should be what they could do with the music as well. That would add a lot to it. The sound and all of that.
Yes.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. It should be very interesting when you sort of put it all into perspective like that.
Exactly. And I'm actually really looking forward to this.
Yes, it's going to be pretty good.
It'll be all right.
Anyway, it's gonna be fun.
Yes. Anyway, moving on to The Little Prince. Now, we watched the English trailer for this earlier on today, and the English trailer really sells it much better than the original French trailer, and I'm really looking forward to this. I really want to see this.
French trailer had a really good song as well. So.
Yeah, French trailer had a really good song that really sold it, but it was a bit too John Lewis, I think.
Very John Lewis.
Yeah.
Change of the music.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's a combination of CG animation and stop motion animation, and it really looks beautiful. It looks amazing. It's received rave reviews from critics all over the world. It's the most expensive animated feature film to be made in France ever. And it's pretty much money in the bank. And a week before its US release, Paramount have pulled out of the distribution.
Is it definitely money in the bank, though?
Yes.
Yeah. It's very different.
It is. Oh, no, it's definite. It's as definite as Song of the Sea was money in the bank.
It's one of those like movies that's like so different from the typical formula. It's like, can we really say that? It's very like good, but we all know, like, look at the games industry. You can make a good game, or you can make a game that will sell well. This hopefully could do both, but it looks so good that maybe it won't.
I can understand what you're saying, but I think it's different when you're dealing with movies.
Right.
Because movies are a very compartmentalized thing. A game is something that you can invest a lot more time in, and you can sink hours and hours and hours, where a movie is, it's a couple of hours, then it's done.
Yeah.
And I think with movies, because
people
it's...
are more likely to sort of impulsively see it, and
exactly.
If the trailer's good enough. Yeah, I understand that.
Just on the commentary here, right, there's been a massive outpouring of support for the director. Mark Osborne is the guy who directed Kung Fu Panda. So it's, you know, it's not just all the other stuff I mentioned. They've got the director of Kung Fu Panda at the helm.
Yeah, it's got a lot, like, behind it to, like, you know, push it.
Exactly.
Was that Kung Fu Panda 3 he was?
Sorry?
Did he do Kung Fu Panda 3?
I don't think so. I think he just did the original Kung Fu Panda.
I was going to say Kung Fu Panda 3 is amazing.
But... here's the thing, with all of that, Paramount was still pulled out, and nobody seems to understand why. Mark Osborne's gone onto Twitter and said, many thanks to everyone for the outpouring of love and support in these strange times, because nobody seems to know why. And he said this on Saturday, as it turns out, the much-anticipated US release of this special and unique film will have to be anticipated just a little bit more. All I can say is The Little Prince will in fact be released by another distributor later this year. Until then, head to Canada. The film opens there in wide release this weekend.
Oh, Canada, man.
Question, is that even okay? Like, didn't they agree to distribute this and all that, and now they're just going, actually, no, we don't feel like it. Is that all right? Like, are they allowed to just do that?
I don't think so. I think there will be liabilities to pay on the part of Paramount. And I would have, literally, if I was in Paramount's position, I would have just bit the bullet and said, okay, fine. You know, if there's only a week left, let's just get it out there, let's see what happens. Because this looks good enough to be a contender to anything Disney can put out.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be up for a few awards.
I mean, in terms of the story, in terms of the animation, in terms of the fact that it's two different types of animation, and it's got Jeff Bridges playing the role of the old man.
Definitely in terms of the premise. I mean, the story remains to be seen. We have to actually see that. I mean, but the premise is
The Little Prince is one different. The Little Prince really is one of the most beloved children's books of all time. Right? So the story is solid. The animation, we've seen the trailer. We can get a good idea of the standard of the animation. It's got a great cast, great director at the helm. You know, it's critically acclaimed all over the world. It's pretty much a done deal, isn't it?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Everyone seems to be disturbed, I should say, about why Paramount has actually pulled out of this. What does Paramount know that nobody else does?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't really seem smart, but I guess what sort of disturbs me is, you know, the fact that, like, say if I said, like, okay, you know, I'm going to get all of the Keyframe episodes out by a certain time, we do a deal about it, and then it's like, oh, no, I'm just not going to do it. It's just like, how is that okay? They definitely need to pay for that.
Yeah. And they probably are going to have to pay for it. I think, because it's contract, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you're in breach of contract, then there's penalties to pay. Usually they're quite heavy. Because contract law is really quite strict, because contract law has to be strict.
It's to stop any breach of contract. So they've got harsh penalties put in place.
Exactly. So Paramount pulling out the deal, there's got to be a reason why. Hopefully we'll find out what the reason is, but there's no guarantees on that. Anyway, moving on to the final piece of news today. And Tucky, I'm going to let you take the lead on this.
The 10th CU award results are...
Sorry, what is it? CU?
CU.
Voice actor. Voice actors.
Yes.
Japanese voice actors. It's just looking at the picture of everybody holding their awards and the random minion to the far
left. I know. See, when you said CU, I was like, what?
Oh, CU, mate.
Is it the 10th awards for the best way to say goodbye?
The 10th Angry Geordie Awards. CU, mate. Outside. New. Yeah, so we've got the newcomer awards for the female. Goes to Sumire Uesaka.
Sumire Uesaka, yeah.
Pronunciation is terrible.
Yes, she's been in she was Anastasia in the Idolmaster Cinderella Girls, Mai Kawakami in Musaigen no Phantom World, Fubuki in Kandai Collection as well.
Yay. Rie Takahashi.
Rie Takahashi, yep.
Yep. Also Ayami Tanaka.
Aimi
Tanaka. Yep. Tanaka like.
Yeah, she was Umaru Doma in Himoto Umaru-chan.
There's also the Best Newcomer Award for Miel, which...
Yuichiro
Umehara. Yeah.
Do you want me to do the...
You do the pronunciations.
Okay. Yuichiro Umehara, who played Mitsuhide Rowan in Akagami no Shirayuki Hime, which I quite like that series, and played En Yufuin in Binan Koko Chikyu Boebu Love.
Can I do the next one?
Yes.
Okay, and next we have Shunsuke Takeuchi.
Yeah, it's not Nakamura. It's not Shunsuke Nakamura. Your face would look better with my knee in it.
Yeah, I wasn't referencing that, but it's fine. He's a ske.
Was the producer in the Idolmaster. He was the producer in the Idolmaster Cinderella Girls.
Isn't it? Hey?
It's an instant. No. If it was Love Live, it's an instant win. And Ayumu Murase, who played Rui Ninomiya in Gatchaman Crowds and Shoyo Hinata in Haikyuu.
Yeah, he looks like such a childish face.
He does.
Now, even his name sounds girlish.
I like it's they've got a personality award. I don't know what the thing is because everybody's got a different personality. Could be the moodiest person.
No, maybe it's the award that Tatum would win every year.
Fabulous award.
Yes. So Kenichi Suzumura won the personality award, and he's played the role of Sogo Okita in Gintama, Mikiya Kokuto in Karano Kyokai. Oh, that was him. Right, yeah. Cool. Shin Asuka in Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Destiny and Masato Hijirakawa in Utano Prince Summer. And the Synergy Award.
Synergy, what?
Well, yeah, what does that mean?
I'm sure it's like Eon Energy. So a Synergy Award for lowest price gas and electricity.
Right, so that Tarako. Was Tarako. And the notable roles there were Momoko Sakura in Chibi Maruko-chan and Mikan from Mikan Eneki.
Maybe she just keeps the whole studio like running, just taking over.
You
just
can do the next one, Lewis.
The last one for Best Vocal Award is Ikira Riz.
I think it's just Iris.
I think that's what it says.
I think it's just Iris, isn't it?
I went for the most awkward pronunciation I could go for.
Yes.
That's what you get for getting me to do it.
Pre-para!
The notable roles are Pre-para. Kids and Family Award.
Pierre Coffin. Yeah. The most depressing name to have as a voiceover for kids' shows.
For Minions.
Minions.
And Despicable Me.
See, though, the West should have given him an award.
Yeah.
Because all the Minions.
Now, Best Supporting Actor went to Kenichi Suzumura. And
I love how they say he used the same headshot.
Yeah. They also went to Hosoya Yoshimasa, who has been Tosuke Yamazaki in Free Eternal Summer, Hal in Hal, which is actually a pretty good movie. Kaito from Aijin, Nezumi from Number 6, which isn't a good series, Olga Itsuka from Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. Best Supporting Actress is Ito Shizuka, and she's played Haruka Morishima from Amagami SS, Hinagiku Katsura from Hayate no Gotoku, Koko Hekmatia, and I remember that her name is Koko She Is Loco from Jormungand.
Oh, she's Meiko in Prison School?
Yeah, she's Meiko in Prison School. But Koko beats Prison School. Koko is nuts. And I like Coco as a character.
I've seen Prison School and I've seen stilettos up backsides and I can't wash that off my head.
Yeah, Coco is nuts. I like Coco.
There's more awards, but I think we'll be here for years. Yeah. The most voted award, best actor.
Shall we just finish off this last one here?
Yep.
The other best supporting actress was Saori Hayami, who played Shirayuki in Akagami no Shirayuki Hime, and actually played the role really well.
Oh.
Actually played the role really well. The Kamiyan, which was the Kamiyan Award, but is now the most voted award, was Hiroshi Kamiya. You notice they can't call it the Kamiyan Award because he's called Kamiya. The best Kamiya.
It's almost like the award was given to him.
Award the Kamiyas that are here today, so you win.
Isaiah.
He played Koyomi Araragi in Bakemonogatari, in the Monogatari series. Isaiah Orihara in Durarara. Takashi Natsume in Natsume Yujinsho, which if you haven't watched Natsume Yujinsho and you are a fan of Supernatural anime and Slice of Life anime, then you really should because it's superb. Best actor.
Matsuoka Yoshisugu.
It's close enough.
Get in!
Played the role of Kirito in Sora Online.
Kirito-kun!
Played the role of Kirito in Sora Online and Sora in No Game No Life.
Yay.
And Soma Yukihira in Shokugeki no Soma.
Huh?
Food porn.
Yes. Best actress was Inori Minase, who played Jun Naruse in Kokoro ga whatever it is.
Saki Bita Garutunda.
Can you pronounce that, Lewis?
Sakebita Gaterunda.
Yay!
We have a winner. Chino Kafu in Gochuman wa Usagi Deska. Hestia in Dungeon ni Dei. Dei.
Motomeru no wa Machigateru.
Is it basically pick up girls in a dungeon?
Yeah. Yes, basically played Hestia in Boob Ribbon.
Boob Ribbon.
I love how simplifying
that
system.
That's what everyone knows her for.
Yeah. And Yuki Takeya in Gakko Gurashi or School Live.
Anime.
Yeah. But the thing is, I like the fact that they actually have these voice acting awards. Yeah, it's the 10th one, but the fact that they have them shows us how much further ahead in terms of voice acting Japan is compared
to the West.
I
guess it makes
sense.
I mean, you know, it's a thing that has to be done for our things to be made and it should be taken seriously.
Well, we don't have a voice acting award of any sort in the West.
Yeah.
And because we don't, I mean, we have Oscars for best acting, but a voice actor is still an actor.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was getting at. I mean, it's a thing that has to be done and it should be done well and taken seriously. And yeah.
You know, I'd love to see what the big awards actually have. If you don't want to treat them as an actor, at least acknowledge the fact that they are still doing a job and still acting.
Mm.
So have the voice acting there.
And it's still a competitive industry. Billions of, dollars and yen go into it, and
exactly
it's a significant industry for Japan alone.
It's getting bigger in China and Korea as well.
It aids countries,
yeah,
and just have a piddly little award ceremony for the people who do the hard work. It's a minimum, at least.
I guess ultimately America needs to wake the hell up and realize that something doesn't have to be live action to be legit.
Yeah. Well, they know that, it's just they don't want to admit it. Because they have all those years, all those decades in Hollywood with live action. And if they admit that animation is just as powerful as live action, then
if not more so,
it kind of makes a nonsense of Hollywood.
Well, then rather than waking the hell up, they need to calm the hell down and, you know, just grab and change.
Have you seen a Donald Trump?
Do you know the funny thing? Nobody makes movies in Hollywood. Seriously.
What you mean as in films them, or do you mean
nobody actually makes films in Hollywood.
No,
nobody actually makes films in Hollywood because it's too expensive. They basically film it on location in other countries or in other cities, but they don't actually make films in Hollywood.
No, the only thing in Hollywood's a drug
You mean
dealers.
As a film location?
As a film location.
Oh, okay.
Where all the movie studios are, they don't make movies.
Yeah. It makes sense.
It's like the UK turn around with Pinewood.
Yeah.
It's like, now we can't film somewhere else.
Well, I remember when there was talk about Pinewood Studios closing.
Yeah.
And everybody suddenly went up in arms because it was Pinewood Studios. Anyone wants to make
a
film,
ever.
Every James Bond ever made was done at Pinewood Studios. Loads of amazing films have been made at Pinewood Studios. And everyone was up in arms because just the thought of it closing. When, well, why is the government letting this happen? What's happening to the UK film industry?
Tories.
Yeah.
Tories are happening.
Well, it wasn't the Tories at that point, I think. No. Oh, it might have been. I can't remember.
It was the government.
Yeah.
The government sucks.
Yes. Anyway, that was the news. So we're going to take a very quick break there. I'm going to take that knife away from Lewis while we're at it. And we'll be back in a moment after this message.
You want the knife? Here.
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Keyframe. We have some reviews. Rob was going to review something, but that knife I threw hit him right in the vitals, so he's not here with us, unfortunately. So, yeah, I guess that's it. We're done. There's nothing we can do about that. See you guys next week.
Bye. I'm here. No, I can't do the high-pitched voice. I'm here.
Yes.
Hello. I can't do the high-pitched voice if it hit me in the vitals. Wasn't that the name of the chief in Asterix?
Oh, so he's alive, just in serious pain. I guess that's better. Vital statistics.
Yes. So I'm going to kick things off right now with a series from MVM Entertainment called Move Love Alternative Total Eclipse.
Mother Love?
No, not Mother Love. Move. MUVLUV.
Oh, I was thinking of something different there for a second.
Yes, you were thinking of something different. Anyway. Move Love, basically it started off as a adult visual novel on the PC in 2003. And it originally consisted of two parts, Move Love Extra and Move Love Unlimited. Now, the weird thing is that this is alternative, and Move Love Alternative is a total spin-off, very similar characters to, if not the same characters, to the original Move Love, but with a completely different setting, completely different story, completely different everything, right? Now, in this story, in 1967, mankind found life on Mars, but it wasn't life as we expected. It's basically War of the Worlds type thing. And the life that they found was alien. It's very grotesque, and it basically kills people because it can. And so starts a war of extinction, effectively. It's basically Attack on Titan, but with monsters from Mars, and we have mechs this time. And somehow these creatures have managed to find their way to Earth and are now attacking Earth. They started attacking in 1973, and now it's years later. I think it's like 1997 or something like that this starts. And you start off with a girl called Yui. She's going to school and she's training to be in the military. Everything is peaceful until the Beta, as they're called. Now, the Beta are basically
Kirito's.
The what?
Kirito's Sword Art Online.
The Beta.
No,
you're a beta and a cheater.
Beta as in Alpha Beta.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that Beta. He's a Beta as in...
So he doesn't wear a black coat. And
he was a Beta because he participated in the Beta.
Yeah, but...
That's making him a Beta.
Yeah, but he's not a biological extraterrestrial entity that is highly aggressive towards humans.
Well, he's biological. He's technically extraterrestrial in the concept of Sword Art Online, because if the Terra is considered to be the game world, he's outside of that, making him extraterrestrial.
No, and I think in his case, he's just extra testicle.
Nani sore.
Anyway, enough of Kirito. The Beta are basically these grotesque monsters. They have various forms, and they tend to use swarming tactics. They're like insects, but huge biological. They look like they were created in some deranged scientist's lab. And they are totally alien to humans. They have like mouths, like titans have mouths, and they're basically huge and ugly and monstrous. There's no way you can look at them and say, okay, we can communicate with these things. They look intelligent.
Sounds like a group of people trying to mug you.
Yeah, if those people crawled on all fours and had a mouth on their back that sprouted up.
I see you've been to the wrong part of Sunderland.
Yes, basically. Anyway.
I didn't want to make the location joke. I'm glad you did that for me.
Anyway, so 1997, things start kicking off. And in 98, Yui Takamura, she's a student of the Kyoto Royal Guard Academy. She meets with her uncle, who she hasn't seen for a while, and he's asking how she is, and everything seems to be peaceful. They're going to the academy, they're studying, everything like that. Everyone's kind of, the threat of the beta is far off, but then it's not so far off because they attack. Yeah. And episodes 1 and 2 are called The Imperial Capital Burns. So it kind of says exactly what happens right there. Now, into this mix comes an American pilot, and his name is Yuya Bridges. He's basically half American, half Japanese. And he hates Japan because when he was growing up, because he's a half, he was subject to a hell of a lot of racism and bullying. And it's one of the few anime where it does actually highlight the fact that people who are half Japanese are subjected to that kind of racism. Mm. It's not a common thing to see in anime. And it gives it a difference right from the beginning that Yuya Bridges, his character, he has bad memories of Japan and he doesn't like Japan. He doesn't like Japanese things. He doesn't like Japanese people because of all the memories of when he was growing up, when he was beaten, when he was bullied, when the people used to call him names just because, you know, he's half Japanese, half American.
Hmm.
And so the trainees from Japan meet with him, and one of the trainees, Yui, she can't understand why Yuya doesn't like Japanese people because she's pure blood Japanese. So she doesn't understand why he doesn't like them. And with humanity being at stake, it seems petty to dwell on something like the way you were treated as a kid, because the beta are literally killing everything in their path.
Hmm.
And humanity is basically, if they can't find a way to fight back properly, humanity will literally become extinct.
So it's really sort of dire.
It's really dire. It's really dark. And they have mechs, and the academies are training people to use these mechs. Now, each of the countries is throwing in their best people and their best abilities. But something happens. From Russia, you have these two pilots called Inya Sestina and Kriska Bachenoa. Now, these two are pilots in one mech. And it seems odd at first, but then you realize that there's something that they can do that other people can't with their mechs. And that plays out later on in the series when you find out what's actually going on the human side. Because with humanity facing this massive war against this alien menace, there are people in the background who are trying to take advantage of that, as there always will be. And this series does well to play on that as well. It does well to kind of highlight that these insidious organizations and people are trying to do things to meet their own needs and their own ends, then damn the rest of humanity. As long as they get what they want, the rest of humanity can burn for all they care.
It's a pretty dark universe that even when you've got an external threat that large, there's still people trying to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Ian Duncan Smith looking at you.
Yeah. Anyway, so Muv Luv Alternative, you have these ongoing battles, and the battles don't just last for one episode. They stretch out over several episodes, and there are characters who you're familiar with who get killed. I mean, literally within the first few episodes, some of the trainees that you meet in the first episode, they'll be killed. Some of them will be gone by episode 3.
This isn't what I was expecting from the name.
It isn't what anyone expected from the name, unless you're like me and you read manga and light novels as well, because then you know that these things are coming,
yeah.
Right? And the weird thing is, Muv Luv Alternative isn't like the alternative manga, right? Muv Luv Unlimited, sorry, the manga, it's not like that one. That one deals with a different story. Muv Luv Alternative Total Eclipse deals with a different story again. With Muv Luv Alternative, the story progresses at a pace, and it's 24 episodes it is, and it is a solid series. It's a solid mech series, and the monsters, the aliens, they are really well designed. They're really well thought out to be, and they're depicted as something that's so completely alien. You know for a fact there's going to be no peace because you can't communicate with them. And it's not to say that people haven't tried, because they do reference on occasion that people have tried to communicate, but they've failed every single time.
Are they those sort of monsters that just seem to be hell-bent on just killing and destroying everything, and that's it?
Basically, they recognize a threat and they attack.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you have, like, a nest of ants, And if you leave it alone, right, then they'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
But if you step on a couple of ants by accident, suddenly they all attack. It's like that. It's that swarming tendency. As soon as they recognize the threat, they will go on the attack. Because for them, attack is the best form of defense. And it's that kind of thing. It doesn't play around with a morality. You know, Attack on Titan has very kind of loose morality at times.
That's a very loose, like.
Yeah.
This, kind of like, what is a Titan sort of thing.
Yeah, this doesn't have that hang up. This kind of goes, look, they are alien. They're not like us. They are attacking us. Doesn't matter who attacked first. The simple fact is, we're in this war now, and we have to win, otherwise everybody dies. And that's literally it. But the thing is, they don't understand how these aliens work. They don't understand what motivates them. They don't understand any of their abilities. They have these little aliens that can fire lasers, but they have these giant eyes that they fire these lasers from, and they don't know how that works. All they know is that they have to kill them, because the mechs, they've got flight mechs, they've got normal mechs, they've got... And everybody's in a mech. Everybody's fighting in a mech because it's the only way they can fight back. But the thing is, that again has a cost, because who's making all these mechs? Because if they get destroyed in battle, they've got to try and salvage them. But by that point, the beta are swarming all over, so they can't salvage them. So they have to keep getting resources to make more mechs from somewhere.
A logistical angle, which you rarely see.
Yeah, there's a logistical angle in this as well. And into this mix, you have Yuya Bridges, you have the Japanese who are taking shelter at the American base, and you have the Russian pilots who have kind of their own agenda as well. And Yuya is in the middle of it all, making friends with everybody. Now, Yuya is a harem lead, right? This does have a lot of harem elements. But the thing is...
Doesn't seem like the time or the place.
Thing is, it doesn't work out the way you think, right? Because Yuya is... so not your typical harem lead. He is so not your typical harem lead, and this seems to be...
Don't think you could afford to be with what's going on around.
Exactly. He doesn't have time for relationships or anything like that. Yes, there are some fanservice-y moments. In fact, there are a lot of fanservice-y moments, because in true mech fashion, this series, because it's based on an adult visual novel, it goes for plug suits with all that entails.
Well, all that's kind of tight-fitting.
Tight-fitting, figure-hugging, you name it, it has it, right? And I don't understand why they can't simply... I don't understand because they don't offer any sort of protection, right? It's not some special fabric or anything like that. It's just like spandex. I'm going to don the spandex with little bits of armor in convenient places.
In a post-apocalyptic world where baby powder's in plentiful supply.
Well, yes, people are dying because of these monsters. You know, they need to be repopulated, and, you know, why not just make things easier?
See, I'm busy fighting and looking sexually attractive at the same time.
See, you know you want me.
After a while, you kind of become desensitized to it, and because it's not really, aside from the first couple of episodes where they do it to clearly titillate, after that, it's just kind of, yeah, done. No, seriously, after that, it's just kind of, yeah, you see them in a plug suit, you see them getting into the mech, that's it. You don't think anything of it, because it's something that happens a lot, and the guys are wearing plug suits as well. Just like in Neon Genesis, it's not just the girls wearing it, the guys are wearing these figure-hugging suits as well. And so it becomes less of a sexual thing and more of just, that's just how it is.
I see. So is it that sort of passive fan service that you get in some things where... You know, if someone just sort of came over and looked at it, they'll be like, oh, that's like pretty sultry. But like when you watch it, nothing like that happens to you.
Yeah, it's all about the context, and it's all about how you think. If you think it's going to be sexual, then, you know, that's just based on how you think. Do you see what I mean? If you want it to be sexual, you'll make it sexual. But if you just watch it as a straight series, you'll just go, I didn't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing things.
You know, but with Mob Love Alternative, it progresses at a fair clip. The story is really well paced. The animation is good for the most part. Mm. It's very good for the most part, but it can deviate from the norm in certain ways. The voice acting is really good in the Japanese dub. The English dub is not bad.
Mm.
The English dub is not bad at all. There is,
would you say it's good?
A lot of sexual moaning.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to mention that. The problem is when they're in combat, right? When they're in combat in the Japanese dub, when they're in combat and you've got the grunts and the strenuous cries and stuff like that, it sounds normal, right? But when you move across to the English dub, it sounds like you're watching porn.
Your man walks in on you watching this.
It's the Japanese dub that sounds normal.
The Japanese dub sounds normal. The US dub, the English dub, sounds like you're watching porn if you basically turn the screen off.
I can actually believe that for a particular reason. Thanks for ruining Ruby Grim Eclipse for me. Thanks. I appreciate that. First, I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I realized, wait, you haven't seen the context of it. Oh.
Anyway, so. Mother Love Alternative. Decent story. And it's actually told quite well. It's got some really good acting. It's got very good action and it's very, very dark. It's one of those series that I think will be a surprise for a lot of people because it's not what they expect. When you think of Mother Love, if you're an older fan like me, you'll be familiar with Mother Love because it's one of those shows that you hear about it. Or you'll have heard about it when it came out in the early 2000s. And when the original series came out, you'll have heard about it, so you'll know about it. And it's surprising that Mother Love has been getting a lot more attention in the last few years, because I didn't expect it. Because you had Mother Love Alternative, Total Eclipse, but you also have currently, you've got Schwarzesmarken, which is currently airing.
Sorry, that name.
Yeah, Schwarzesmarken. Is currently airing, and that is actually another spin-off of the Mother Love franchise.
Sounds like a player who used to play in midfield for Arsenal.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's actually another spin-off, and by all reports, it's actually pretty decent. By all reports, it's actually pretty decent, and it's set in the 1980s in an alternate timeline version of East Germany. So
interesting.
Yeah, and it deals with the 666 squadron of the East German army.
Is that like a paranormal division?
Yeah, basically. Well, no, they're not the paranormals. They're basically a mech division. They're known as the Black Marks, which is what the name means, Schwarzesmarken. And they are fighting the Beta in Europe. So, I mean, we're talking about the Beta aren't just attacking Japan. They're attacking everywhere in the world. Japan is basically one of the lines of defense for America to stop the Beta crossing the Pacific and hitting mainland America.
Sounds like it could lead somewhere then. So does that mean that they're not done with the series yet?
I don't think they're done with the Mother Love franchise at all because on top of that, you've got the manga, which I think is Mother Love Unlimited, or was it something like that? And that is basically, that deals with alternate dimensions. So Mother Love is going cosmic. And the main character in that, he's basically trying to save the world and trying to save as many people as possible. And he's having to move across timelines to try and find the best solution to save as many people as possible. Because from his perspective, he's got no loyalty to any country. His main mission, his only mission, is save as many people as possible. Because from his perspective, there's probably no way humanity can beat the Beta. So it just gives it that spin. So that's Mother Love Alternative, Total Eclipse, from MVM. It's well worth a watch.
Sounds interesting.
So over to you then, Lewis. What you got for us?
Okay, well, moving on to something a little bit lighter. Just a bit. I mean, it's still got murder attempts in it. So I've been watching Kill Me Baby or Baby, Please Kill Me. And hey, I'm trying to talk here. Take this seriously. yeah, and it's a comedy, and it revolves around, it's got a very, very, very basic premise. It revolves around about three characters.
Yeah.
The main character is Yasuna Oribe, and she goes to an unnamed high school, and her main character trait is that she's incredibly stupid. Peter Griffin levels are stupid.
Okay.
And she's with a friend called Sonia, and she's from another country, but she's an assassin. And then there's another character called Agiri, and she's a ninja from the same organization as Sonia. And then there's some other character that no one cares about. And and basically it's about them just going through their high school lives. And the main thing to sort of that sort of sets up the framework of this is, again, Sonya is an assassin, so she has certain tendencies.
Yeah.
And she's got a very sort of jaded and cynical personality. And Yasuna is insufferably stupid. Like, again, Peter Griffin is a very sort of, you know, easy comparison to make. And that's basically the framework of it. Like, you know, how does like an assassin sort of interact with this other person? And I watched like the first two episodes, and, you know, I got a few giggles out of it here and there from the antics of Yasuna. And then, you know, I really sort of wanted to like it. It was sort of charming. It was quirky. And I got to the second episode and I'm like, this just isn't sort of getting enough laughs for me. And then I watched episode three and I was like, okay, surprise me. Impress me. You have to impress me now. I'm not going to follow your rules. You impress me. So I sat there and I started watching it. And I watched it from a very sort of like detached perspective, not trying to get the jokes. And it became a lot funnier because now, rather than paying attention to the idiot, I was paying more attention to the straight man. And it's very good at predicting your mindset if you don't find the antics of the main character to be particularly something that you can cope with. So if you like really silly humor and you watch some of the stuff that Yasuna does, you might get some laughs out of it. But if you don't find that funny, if you find yourself going like, oh, she's too stupid, pay attention to Sonya. And then it kind of flips everything over and it becomes a lot more amusing. So from that perspective, the show is actually quite funny. And a lot of the jokes revolve around the fact that Yasuna is one of those people who she's always sort of trying to amuse herself in some way. She always wants to be in a good mood. She's always energetic to a fault. And she often has some sort of ploy to do something to amuse herself or to get some sort of reaction out of Sonya or what have you. And it often results in things just going absolutely horribly for her. And I guess we could start off with how she interacts with Sonya first. What she often does, for example, is one of the first sort of things we see her do is she goes up comes up behind Sonya and just kind of goes, hi. And some people are okay with that, but some people really aren't. Like, I don't like it when people do that. But I'm not an assassin, so I'm not going to turn around and snap your hand. But that is something that will happen to Yasuna. And the humor sometimes feels a bit by the numbers because it reuses certain dynamics and certain jokes a lot.
Yeah.
But it does it so much that it gets to a point where it plays with it in subtle ways. So, for example, you know Sonya never learns not to do that, and you know Yasuna never learns not to surprise Sonya. So you know you can sort of predict it to some extent, but then sometimes it sets up some small subversions, or sometimes it's like, we're going to subvert this, and it plays like a different angle, and then inevitably it happens again. And it's, you know, it can bring some laughs in these weird sort of subtle ways. Another thing about Sonya is that she's sort of one of those people who's, again, very sort of jaded and what have you, but she has like a few sort of weaknesses. And the main ones are certain things scare her, like loud sounds, dogs, like animals a lot, and bugs. So Yasuna often uses these to try and get under her skin and try and get reactions out of her, either with things backfiring spectacularly or just resulting her getting to a point where she just gets her comeuppance for it. And I think that's pretty amusing because if you sort of look at it from a perspective of like, hey, Yasuna is messing around, that's funny. You may not get a laugh out of that. But if you kind of see her as the insufferable fool that she is, there comes a point where you're like, do you know what? Stop it, stop it, stop it. You need to be hit. She gets hit. So it's almost like, you know, it's pretty good at sort of determining where your patience level is with the idiot. And again, as I mentioned before, there's another character called Agiri. She's a ninja, but she has a lot of ninja techniques and ninja tools, but none of them are legitimate in any way. And she essentially uses Yasuna's idiocy and to some extent Sonya's tendency to play along, either to prove herself or to get Yasuna to shut up, to get various gains from them. So like monetary gains, you know, for her own amusement, stuff like that. So it's kind of amusing sort of seeing a person who's so simple-minded and is so sort of wrapped up in trying to have a good summer holiday or wanting to get shaved ice or whatever, that she will do something as ridiculous as buy dry ice and try and eat it. And just seeing how, like, you know she's going to come and manipulate them all, and it's like, you're not very nice. But she always does it. She always finds some way to trick them, and it's just a matter of, like, what are you going to do now? So, you know, it's weird because it uses, again, all in all, it uses quite a few similar tricks over and over, but it varies them enough to keep things relatively entertaining. And again, you've got, like, you know, two perspectives to look at the show from. If you just want to see some silly stuff, just focus on the stuff that Yasin is doing. If you are, you know, a bit more accustomed to seeing that and you're not surprised by it, you know, watch for Sonya's reactions, see how she responds to certain things, and you'll get a surprising amount of enjoyment out of that. Just for a few examples of some of the funnier scenes that really show, like, how ridiculous the characters can be, is one of them where Yasina finds a bucket-type bin thing and puts it on her head, or puts it, or says that she wants to put it on Sonya's head to mess with her, but then puts it on her head, starts messing around, and then finds that it's stuck. They try all these different things to get it off, from, like, you know, trying to smack it off, trying to, like, fill it with salad oil, from heating it up, and she goes through so much pain and suffering that she's not happy-go-lucky anymore. She's, like, genuinely in fear. And then finally it just pops off by chance. And then the first thing she does is, well, maybe that means I can put it on and off by will. It's just like, yeah, it's just like she never learns. She's going to mess back up. As soon as it comes off, 5 seconds later, it's back on. And then there's the one where she decides that she wants to do darts, but she's wasted all of her money on all of this frivolous stuff for her own entertainment in the past. So she makes her own makeshift dartboard. And then it eventually turns out that they just end up competing against each other. Sonya takes the bait of, you're an assassin, but you can't aim. Prove it. And then they start drawing targets on each other. And then the next thing you know, they've written point scores on their head with marker. And then after their big battle ends, they realize, we look like idiots with this on our heads. They try and wash it off. It doesn't come off.
Permanent marker.
Yep. So they're just sitting there in class with 0 points on their heads. And then to top it off, there's some mumbling in the background, but it's just two voices. One of them says, I can't tell if these guys are just stupid or if there's something seriously wrong with them. And the other voice is like, these guys shouldn't even, like, be in school, man. They should be in, like, a special school or something. But they're just both together, so it just kind of sounds like, rush, rush,
rush, rush, rush. Yeah.
And you stop and listen to it, and you're like, ouch. So, yeah, it can be pretty funny. Its style is very sort of basic. A lot of the background characters are drawn very simply. I don't think the production values of this are very high because the animation is not the smoothest, but it's got a nice sort of chibi style, and it's, you know, cute and quirky enough, and it does the job all right. The voices are... It's actually got an English dub, which surprised me. The English dub is just fine as far as I'm concerned. In fact, the English dub voices, they match the Japanese ones quite well. It's almost as if, like, the same person is speaking a different language almost, and I think that's a very good thing if you can pull that off. So the voices fit the characters quite nicely. The mouth flaps can be quite off in the English dub, but again, it's mostly about the slapstick interactions between the characters. And really, it's just about seeing how spectacularly Yasina can fail. She never learns. She always fails time and time again. And it's just what it comes down to, really. It won't surprise you all the time, and it's not meant to surprise you all the time. But occasionally, when you think you're getting used to just everything that's going on, it will throw something slightly different, or it will read you, and you'll get a laugh out of it. So, you know, all in all, it's... I mean, I spoke a lot about the same sort of things because it uses a few simple tricks, but I think it uses them fairly well, and I think it's a moderately enjoyable series. And of course, there's the character that we don't talk about. She just appears and gets left behind every time.
Okay, cool. So, finally, or firstly,
for the first time,
and never, the only time.
Never been heard before.
Yes.
I was reviewing Fuse or Fusee, Memoirs of a Hunter Girl on DVD from All the Anime Limited.
Cool.
Doesn't it feel like you're just saying the same words again and again and again? Initial feelings on the opening screen of the DVD. It has a very Parisian, French type feel with the music, that repeats continuously on the opening menu. The story follows Himeji. I'm pronouncing it right this time.
Himeji.
No, it's Himeji. Himeji?
It's ham first.
Himeji, Hamaji, Hibidi, Hamaji, Hibidi, Hamaji, who?
Wikipedia is.
I looked on Mal.
Yeah, well, I got it.
And Anime News Network.
It's Himeji, isn't it?
So who's right? Is it Tucky or is it Rob? There's only one way to find out.
Arbitration from Anime News Network.
Da 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 da. Characters. No, it's Hamaji.
Great.
You know what the thing is? I actually proofread that to make sure I was right with it. And it's like, oh, it's Himeji. Internet, you failed me once again.
Anyway, Hamaji.
Oh, and I wonder, I put Hamaji for the rest of the Himeji first. So the story follows Hamaji, a young girl who has lived the majority of her life in the mountains with her granddad, training to be a huntress. But she is reluctant to leave, and even after poor old granddad has died, she is willing to stay until a monk arrives with a letter from her long-lost brother who lives in a remote part of Edo. And she decides to take him up on the offer to go and live with him.
Okay.
So trying not to go into spoiler territory, the story follows her adventures in the big city. She adjusts to life and discovers that the world is a much bigger place than she once first thought. So this period of Edo, there's an evil menace known as Fuse, or Fuse-A, however you pronounce it, which is written in Japanese as a combination of the words human and dog. This plays on an old legend that a princess was once promised to whoever brought the head of a traitor against the emperor, and it turned out to be a pet dog who brought the head, so she married the dog.
Ooh.
And in time bore its child. I know it's trying to get a response when he's already no bestiality's coming.
Well, it doesn't show it. We'll find that out. It doesn't actually show any of that.
Oh, no, there's no like graphic.
Disgusting. Anything.
So, and that's where we get Fuse here. And obviously the emperor at the time kicked off because his daughter and a dog running off together to have kids. It's just not the done thing. Unless you're on Jeremy Kyle, when it probably is the done thing.
It's just not wolf children.
No, it's not. It's not done in a nice, heartwarming way.
Yeah. And the thing is, he was a werewolf. He was a guy most of the time.
Yeah, so he's at least part species. Not just like full dog.
He's a half.
Apologies for the imagery running in your head. Now Fuse here kind of like a shapeshifter's more along the lines of a Windigo.
Windigo.
Not
we're
a Winnebago.
We're not doing the Winnebago.
No, we're not doing the Winnebago. that sticks old.
Yeah, they're not campervan type
I've
things.
I've heard that joke Wendigo. Before somewhere.
Wendigo is what you're after, isn't
it's
it?
It's like the joke I just made.
Wendigo or Windigo. Anyway, rather than a werewolf, they can transform into dog form, and to live they have to eat a human's essence, which looks like molten gold. I'm sure that Pepsi will have a flavour of it out soon. So the only way to kill a Fuse is to sever the head at the neck.
Look at Are you sure it's a Fuse and not a Highlander?
Yeah,
there can only be.
Well, technically, along them lines, there can only be one.
Yeah.
So Hamaji and her brother take up the request of the Lord at the time, which is to exterminate all Fuse because the Lord has his reasons. Her brother wants to take on the mission for the huge reward and believes that it'll get him a proper job as a samurai. So in recruiting his sister, who, you know, is an expert huntress, they go off to hunt for Fuse. Once again, trying not to go into too much detail because it might spoil it, Hamaji gets to see the sight of Edo, but the kicker is one of our guides is one of the last Fuse, Shino, who kind of falls a bit for her, despite believing that she's a man initially.
Are you sure it's not Shino McLeod?
It ain't like that. Shino McLeod.
I like girls.
Sean Connery.
His name wasn't Sean Connery. It was Ramirez, the most Scottish Spaniard in history.
I tell you what, he did make a great dragon, though.
Yes, he did.
He made us lose where I am. Ba, 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 ba. So stuff happens and Shino becomes the last Fuse here, which brings us to a final showdown between him and the Lord of the Land, which is really anticlimactic.
Okay.
Because it's like a whole movie builds up to this one confrontation and it's disappointing. So try supporting Sunderland and you'd probably get the feeling of disappointment of what I've got. It's on par with that.
Football jokes.
Yeah.
Scores a goal. The offside.
Anyway.
So I've touched on a few things like plot-wise, but it feels in parts like it's trying to capture sort of like a magical element to it. Like, does things develop? No. Falls flat on its face. Hamaji, like I say, she's a trained huntress. She's been in training with old and bitter granddad in a remote mountain range, and she's got heightened awareness and senses to ordinary humans. And though the movie's supposed to develop her from a killer who hunts to survive, she ends up just being a lost girl in the big city who knows how to shoot and doesn't read.
Is that the extent of her adventures in the big city?
Yeah, it's basically like, oh, here's a letter. Oh, but I can't read.
See, when you
I can shoot
it,
a gun though.
When you call it memoirs or memories or whatever it is of a hunter girl, I'm thinking like it's. My initial reaction to this was literally memories of hunter girl. So literally, she was a girl who was a hunter. Maybe it's later on in life. Maybe, you know, she's passed away and someone's found the diary she kept.
Yeah.
You know, that detailed her adventures, her exploits, that sort of thing. And then I sat down and watched this.
Yeah, it's not her writing it. It's some weird little kid girl whose granddad's famous for being a great writer, but she's just kind of bitter at him because he's famous. And she's trying to teach her to carry on, but she's just not interested. And I mean, she's about as interested in it as I am, really, when it comes to it, because she kind of generates this friendship from being just like background character, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're a background character. Do you want to join the crew? Go on then. And it doesn't move any further forward than that. Let's see. Hajime's only redeemable characteristic is
Hamaji.
Such an odd, it's a weird name, isn't it?
Our only real redeemable characteristic is the skill with a gun. If you take away the fact that she's supposed to be like the main focus of this movie and she would work on as like a generic support character, perhaps. I mean, from my point of view, I'd say the bigger part should have been given to like the Lord or even Shino the Fuse. Because Shino's character, we knew from the start that he was a Fuse, and through the whole thing, Hamaji seems oblivious to the fact, even though she had like background knowledge of him before he's like the big reveal, like, oh no, you're a wolf beast too. It's like, yeah, you saw us on the bridge at the beginning, killing people. I took your gun and beat people with it. How did you not know? But like, he's a much better character. I mean, he's a kabuki actor or actress, so.
Actor. Yeah. He's a kabuki actor, but he plays a lot of female roles.
Very, very female role. And the kabuki troupe puts on a show telling of his people's origins and he's also dealing with abandonment issues because his mother, who was top whore for the city, abandoned him in a cesspool of used makeup and other rotting fetuses.
That's really grim.
Yeah. It still gets the same reaction even though it's sold twice.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's dark. But on top of all that, I mean, he's got to constantly hunt humans to survive. He has to eat a human's essence just to live for a few days or weeks. It doesn't really specify, but
so technically he's a vampire.
Well, he has to kill to live.
Yeah,
and he's done that since being an abandoned child in a cesspool at the dark side of the city. So he's done alright for himself.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm surprised, but there's been no actual kind of hunts for people going missing.
Well, no, this is the thing. There was 8 fuses, and like when the movie starts, 6 of them caught, apart from him and his estranged whore of a mum. And he's got to try and like blend into the city while not giving himself away as like a murderous beast. And he's being constantly hunted with unfounded hatred and greed, because the Lord of the Land's just saying, like, I will throw money at you if you bring me the head of these things. And greed is a powerful thing. And hunts one species down to extinction. But really, the movie should have been called Memoirs of the Fuse.
Okay.
Or Fuse, yeah. I'd even go so far to say as the clumsy brother should have had a bigger part in the movie. He was a loafing samurai who had one get-rich-quick scheme after another just to get by. Then he's reunited with his long-lost sister, and he has to become her guardian and teacher. All the while, he's discovered that he's going to be a father, so he has to mature because it's not just him in the world anymore. He's going to have a sprog along, so...
Sounds like there's a lot going on in such a short movie.
And that's the thing. It's definitely a much better character than Hajime, who's like, oh, I'm a hunter girl.
Hajime?
Hamaji.
Running joke of that name.
You got to see it when I pronounce it right as well, just to throw us off. Like I say, there's much better characters than her. Because all she can do is shoot a gun and can't read.
What's it like in terms of production?
Movie's quite colourful. Fantastic animation style. It's very colourful and adds a little extra dazzle. And by God, it needed that little extra dazzle. The plot does stay together, but the main character, like I say, is a letdown. I think they were going for like the heart-touching kind of coming-of-age angle, but kind of missed the point. Interest-wise, I did almost drop to sleep in parts. And Donna, who was watching it with us, she missed the last 30 minutes because she just nodded off. So lots of pro plus before you get into this one.
Yeah.
It's a good movie despite its flaws, and it's definitely worth watching even just the once. That's why I've given it a Tucky rating of 5 stars.
Fantastic. Right, and with that then... We are, unfortunately, at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Yes, it is working again.
Yay!
And also, you can find all of our shows on Mixcloud, iTunes, soon YouTube again, and Stitcher as well. We are going to have the new site up and running very, very soon, in the next few days, hopefully. So that look out for it. Now... The Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization, so we do need everyone's support in order to keep bringing you this wonderful content. So if you have liked this show or any of our other shows, then please show your support by making a donation using the button on the right-hand side of our website or by purchasing one of our lovely items from our shop. More designs are on the way. As soon as the website is finished, you'll see far more additions to the shop. So there'll be a much broader selection and a much wider selection of things that might tickle your fancy. So, yes, from now and until next week, I have been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all next week. Take care. Have fun.
And we'd love for you to be on the hunt for us next time. Man, these puns are getting old. Baby, please kill me.